Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Implementing Cache Replication in WebSphere Application Server Version 6.1 and Version 7. Today's presenter is Rama Bogarbu. Rama has worked in the WebSphere Application Server Support Team since April 2002. He is responsible for solving customer problems related to WebSphere Application Server, specializing in various components including session management, dynamic cache, data replication service, web container, and class loader. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Rama.
Thank you, Joseph. Good morning, everyone. This is Rama Bogarbu. I'll be talking about implementing cache replication in WebSphere Application Server version 6.1 and version 7, and most of the information is even applicable for version 6.0 as well. Let's go on to the next page. For today's agenda, I'm going to talk about dynamic cache and briefly about dynamic data replication service, and then I'm going to cover about dynamic cache replication and then monitoring the cache and few slides about troubleshooting common issues with dynamic cache. Move on to the next slide. Dynamic cache. Okay, move on to the next slide, please. Okay, dynamic cache in WebSphere Application Server. Dynamic cache provides core caching infrastructure for applications running on WebSphere Application Server, including various stack products like Portal Commerce. You use dynamic cache to improve the application performance to cache the response data as well as application-related data. It provides in-memory cache as well as disk cache. It also provides replication support for expensive-to-recreate objects. Remember, you should use replication for expensive-to-recreate objects as there is additional overhead for cache replication from one JVM to the other JVM. It supports multiple cache instances. This helps you to isolate cache data based on the nature of the cache. So, for example, you might be having two different web applications running on the server, and you may want to separate the cache for each web application. So it provides multiple cache instances support. It interoperates with other external caches, and the commonly used ones are the ESI caching as well as some edge-side caching. It works on all platforms that WebSphere Application Server runs on, including ZOS. Let's move on to the next slide. There are various types of caching supported in WebSphere Application Server, like servlet, JSP, or portlet response caching, web service caching, as well as JAX RPC client caching. This is used if you're having JAX RPC client running on application server, you can cache the web service responses as well. And command caching. Command caching, like I know WebSphere Commerce Server uses a lot of command caching, but in addition to command caching, there is a distributed map and distributed object cache. And most of the custom applications who want to place their own plain old Java objects into the cache, treating it as a hash map, they use this distributed map or distributed object cache. There is also support for edge-side include caching as well as external cache adapters. Okay, let's move on to slide 6. Okay, here is some picture that shows various things in dynamic cache service. As you can see on the top, servlet or JSP, command, web services, and distributed map. These are all the interfaces for the dynamic cache. You can define various rules for servlet JSP caching or command or web services in cachespec.xml. Dynamic cache is nothing but a hash table-like data structure, and it's very powerful. It provides various features like dependency invalidation support, LRU replacement policies you can configure. You can configure disk offload, like if you want to save your memory or if you want to limit the memory resources, you can use this disk offload feature. And XML cache policy management. Like basically in the cachespec.xml, you define all the cache rules or cache policies in the form of XML. Invalidation and replication support. With the data replication, you can make the cache to look very consistent to all the JVMs in your cluster. There are various modes of replication available. The couple of things that are listed in here are not shared, push, and push pull. Dynamic cache service worked with the DRS to do the data replication. And it works with cache adapters to provide support for edge-side caching and other external products like IHS, WebSphere, Proxy Server, XD, and AFPA cache. Move on to slide number 7. Okay, now just I talked about dynamic cache. It's a hash table-like structure, but what are the contents of the dynamic cache? In the dynamic cache, there are various entries which are known as cache entries. Each cache entry will have a cache ID and cache content. This cache ID will be used to uniquely identify an entry in the cache, and the cache content itself is the actual data. In addition to cache ID and cache content, there will be a lot of other information like dependency IDs, timeout invalidation, replication support, what type of replication to be used, and various other information like disk offloading location. All those things will be in the dynamic cache container. You can use Cache Monitor ER application to view most of the contents in the cache. In next few slides, I might be talking about Dynamic Cache Monitor and what you can cover in Dynamic Cache Monitor, maybe a few slides after. Move on to slide number 8. Cache instances. What is a cache instance? As I mentioned earlier briefly, a cache instance is like a separate store to retrieve and share the data objects within the dynamic cache. Each cache instance can be configured independently with various attributes like the timeout, invalidation rules, or replication rules, disk offload location. You can specify all these things independently for each cache instance. There is one default cache instance in each application server. This is also known as base cache. There are two types of cache instances available. You can create cache instances for servlet cache, object cache. Servlet cache, you use cachespec.xml to define the cache policies, and servlet cache can be used for various things like servlet, JSP, web services, JAX RPC, command caching. All these things can be defined in cachespec.xml, and the cache instance that you use to create this is servlet cache type. Object cache. You use object cache instance for storing the plain old Java objects into a hash table-like structure. This is also known as a distributed map. And you can configure cache instance, or you can create custom cache instances in different ways. The first one is administrative console under resources on the left-hand side navigation panel. You can also create a cache instance based on a properties file, and the name of the properties file is cacheinstances.properties file. And you can also create the cache instance as a resource reference in web.xml. I have seen various people using the first two methodologies like administrative console as well as properties file. Very few people will use this resource reference in web.xml. Let's move on to slide number 9. Here, I'm showing an admin console panel for dynamic cache configuration for the default cache instance. In order to go to this page on the admin console, you choose application servers, server name, and then under the container services, you click on the dynamic cache service, you get this page. As you can see, for the default cache instance, to enable the servlet cache, you need to enable in web container settings. To enable portlet caching, you need to enable it in the portlet container settings. And the cache provider, there will be only one option in the pull down there. You can specify the cache size. Right now the picture shows it's 2000. So 2000 entries will be stored in this cache. And default priority is 1, and you can limit the memory cache size, as well as you can enable the disk cache settings by checking the disk offload box. Once you enable the disk offload checkbox, you'll have more options to specify disk offload location and other eviction policies. Consistency settings. This is where you specify the replication. I'll be talking more about the cache replication in coming slides. Let's move on to slide number 10, which is the configuration for a custom cache instance. As you can notice here, for a custom cache instance, there are a few more options available, like the cache name and the JNDI name, and you can also specify the description for the custom cache instance. Basically, you use the JNDI name you specify here for performing a lookup operation to get a hold of DMAP API. You can use this name, cache instance name, in the cachespec.xml if you're using a servlet-based custom cache. And all other options are pretty much same to the default cache instance. Let's move on to slide number 11. Okay, cache policy management. How do you configure the cache policy? You use cachespec.xml to manage the cache entries. Cachespec.xml is a deployable XML policy file that contains various caching rules. You can specify what to be cached, whether it is a command cache, servlet, web service, JAX RPC, or a static page like a HTML or images, or a portlet cache. You can specify how to identify an item in the cache, like cache ID. You can define the cache ID rules. Say, for example, if you are having a servlet to be cached, you can specify the cache ID on what basis the servlet need to be cached, on request parameters or some request headers or some session data. You can configure various things to define the cache ID for each entry. Where to cache, whether to cache memory only or disk. When to invalidate, whether time-based invalidation as well as the invalidation rules. How to handle dependencies. Can specify in the cachespec.xml. How to share across servers in the cluster, use the sharing policy. All these things are, if you want to see the actual DTD or actual entries for cachespec.xml, you can find them in the info center. And in the next slide, I'm going to show you a snippet of the cachespec.xml just for your overview. If you move on to slide number 12, in this line, you can see I defined a cache entry, and this cache entry is of type servlet cache, and I'm creating the cache ID based on the parameter, which is an action parameter, as well as category parameter, and a session attribute named layout. I showed here how to define the dependency rule, and there are some invalidation rule on what basis you want to invalidate the cache entry. The actual cache entry could be very complicated than this one. All the rules or all the tags that you can use for the cache entry, you can find it in the information center. We move on to slide number 13. What is distributed map or distributed object cache? This is a portal cache that you use to store your own custom objects into the dynamic cache component. It provides simple interface to manipulate hash map implementation of the dynamic cache service. Cache instance can be defined in any of the three methods for distributed map, like in the console, properties file, or web.xml. JNDI name for the custom cache is specified in the console or in the properties file. If you want to use the default cache, the JNDI name for the default cache is services cache distributed map. In order to access the distributed map, you use these steps, whatever I have mentioned here, like initial context equal to new initial context, and distributed map equal to initial context dot lookup of the GNDI name of your cache, and the returned object you can cast it to distributed map. Once you get hold of this distributed map, you can use like dmap.put to put objects into the cache, and dmap.get to get objects from the cache, and there are various other methods available for this dmap interface. You can also override the configuration, like the cache size, all those things via API call to the dmap. There is also overloaded put method available, so you can override the cache rules for a specific cache entry, like the replication type or the time to leave, various things you can override using the overloaded put method available on distributed map. Move on to slide number 14. On to slide number 15. So in next few slides, I'm going to talk about the dynamic cache or data replication service. Data replication service is an internal WebSphere application server component that you use for replicating the cache content. It's a transport for sending data objects or events from one managed server to the another. Internally, it uses HA Manager, which is High Availability Manager, and DCS component to accomplish the data replication service. It has a notion of replicas. However, for dynamic cache, you use the entire replication domain. Like if you have like five servers in a cluster, in data replication service, when you create a replication domain, you can specify how many replicas you want to maintain. You use this one for the other services like session management as well as stateful session bean. When it comes to dynamic cache component, you need to configure number of replicas as entire domain. DRS is responsible for serialization and deserialization of messages. The DRS bootstrap is very expensive, especially if you are using the dynamic cache aggressively and using data replication for dynamic cache, the bootstrap process could become very expensive. Dynamic cache, HTTP session, stateful session beans, and SIP container are major consumers of the data replication service. The data transfer channel can be encrypted, but in practice, nobody does this encryption on DRS component. DCS uses stock topology for synchronicity, resulting in scalability and bottlenecks. Move on to slide number 16. Here, I have shown you an admin console page for configuring the replication domain. You use the, under environment, if you click on the replication domains, you can go to this page where you can create an a replication domain or configure. The page that shows here is like creating a new replication domain, where you can specify the name of the replication domain, you can specify the encryption type, you can choose number of replicas. For dynamic cache replication, you need to use entire domain, whereas if you are using session replication, you can choose single replica or you can specify number of replicas where you want to, how many ever you want to keep the backup copies. If you move on to slide number 17, I'm going to talk about cache replication in next few slides. Let's move on to slide number 18. So I'm showing you a picture here where you have a cluster of three application servers and you don't have the replication enabled. So each server builds its own cache. What if one of the entries gets invalidated and request goes to the other server? They might be serving the same old cache information. A typical example I can say, if you are having a product catalog and one of the product information get updated, the catalog itself, which is cached in three different application server, may not get updated immediately because of the invalidation rules based on the product ID. So you can end up having inconsistent data across application servers, and sometimes you might also have access control issues for the cached data. Let's move on to slide number 19. So, cached replication. You use this cached replication to extend the benefits of dynamic cached replication, to extend the benefits of dynamic cached service by enabling cached replication. Data generated in one server can be copied or replicated to the other servers in the cluster. It saves time and resources in generating the data on a different application server at the cost of replication. It also aids consistency of data by removing the entries that are not needed or replaced across servers. Various types of replication can be configured to accommodate the CPU memory constraints without compromising the consistency. Let's move on to slide number 20. Here I am showing you a simple picture where once you have dynamic cache replication enabled, all servers can talk with each other regarding to the dynamic cache service, and you can make the cache look alike. Even though entries may not be same on each server, some one of the cache might be big and one might be small depending on your configuration, but you can make it look alike by using cached replication. Let's move on to slide number 21. Okay, let's talk about various types of replication. There are various types of replication configurable based on your need for CPU usage or memory limitations. And in all these replication types, one common thing is the invalidation event will be sent across servers. Okay, let's talk about the push mode. In push mode, the cache ID and the cache data will be sent to all servers in the cluster. So if you have four servers and server one builds a request and a cache entry, that cache entry will be pushed immediately based on the push frequency to the other servers in the cluster. Remember, push is little more expensive because you are pushing the data to all the servers in the cluster, and when you have situations when one server goes up and down in the configuration for maintenance purposes or for other reasons, you might be bringing a server up and down. In all those cases, if you are using push mode, then all the data need to be replicated during DRS bootstrap, and it could be expensive and it may take some time depending on how much data you have and how many servers in the cluster. And the next mode is the pull mode. Pull mode is not recommended, and it is also marked for deprecation. In pull mode, the server won't send the data, the originating server won't send the data across servers, but whenever a request goes to a server and it builds the cache ID, if the cache ID content is not present in the server, it will send a message to all servers in the cluster requesting for the cache data, and as you can imagine, there could be a lot of traffic because each server might be asking all the servers and they might be responding with the messages and the data may need to get discarded. So pull mode is not recommended and it is also marked for deprecation. Push-pull mode. This is a special mode like push-pull mode where you push the cache IDs. Whenever a new cache entry gets created, each server will announce the cache ID gets created on each dynamic cache component to all the servers in the cluster. So all the servers in the cluster will maintain a DRS push-pull table with the cache ID and the server name where the cache entry exists. So whenever the server needs that cache entry, it will go and ask that specific application server to send the cache content to its dynamic cache component. So performance-wise, sometimes push-pull mode might be better than the push mode, but you have to be really careful whether the cost of replication is really worth replicating, or you may choose to build the cache on the server itself because replication may be expensive than the data building itself. So for that reason, we have provided a third option, which is a not shared mode. So if you have chosen not shared mode, then when a cache content gets generated, it will be only in that particular server. And if a similar entry is needed in a different server, it will build its own entry. So the main purpose of using not shared mode is to maintain the data consistency. So if you have a catalog page which is cached on four different cluster members, and if the catalog page becomes invalidated on one of them, then when you use this mode, the invalidation event will be pushed to all the servers in the cluster, so all other four servers can discard its contents since the catalog page became invalid. So you use this not shared mode to maintain the consistency of data across servers rather than replicating the data itself. I know various stack products like Portal or Commerce uses this not shared mode to maintain consistency. If you try to use the other modes like push mode or push pull mode, the cache usage is so heavy, like you may have some performance issues as well as memory bottlenecks kind of thing. Let's move on to slide number 22. Okay, where do I configure these replication types? You can configure this replication type on the same page as you configure replication domain or dynamic cache replication service. In the consistency services, you go and choose the replication type. As you can see in the pull-down, there are various options available, like both push and pull, in which case ID will be pushed, but the content will be pulled as needed. Pull only, each server will pull the data if it needs the data. Push only. In this push-only mode, whenever a new entry is created, the new entry will be pushed to all the servers in the JVM, in the cluster. And you use not shared mode to maintain consistency of data across server. In not shared mode, the cache ID or the cache content will not be pushed to the other servers, but only the invalidation events will be pushed to all the servers in the cluster. Let's move on to slide number 23. This is for the custom cache, and the consistency settings are similar here. Let's move on to slide number 24. If you are using properties file, instead of defining the replication domain or the cache instance on the console, then you use these specific properties to enable the replication. The first property is cache.instance.instanceName, in this case it is instance 1, .enable cache replication equals true. The other property to specify the replication type, and replication type could be not shared, push, pull, or push-pull, and use the numbers 1, 2, 3, or 4 for appropriate type. And the replication domain that you want to use for this cache instance, you can specify as a string argument. Let's move on to slide number 25. Okay, you can also override the replication type at each cache entry level. Say, for example, you have got handle to the DMAP by the first two steps, like by doing getting a new initial context and performing a lookup on the initial context with the GNDI name of the cache, you get the DMAP. You can specify DMAP.setSharingPolicy and specify the sharing policy here. This will override the sharing policy that you have defined either in admin console or in the properties file. You can also override for each entry that you put into the cache by using one of the overloaded put methods, bm.put. As you can specify, there are various arguments available, and one of the arguments is the sharing policy. So you can specify the sharing policy. There are various sharing policy available as discussed in last slides. Entryinfo.notshared, entryinfo.sharedpush, entryinfo.sharedpull, and entryinfo.sharedpushpull mode. So you can use the specific sharing policy you want to use here. Let's move on to slide number 26. Next couple of slides, I'm going to talk about the cache monitoring application. Let's move on to slide number 27. So what is a cache monitoring application? This application comes as an enterprise application along with the WebSphere application server product. So once you install WebSphere application server, under installed apps folder, you will find cachemonitor.ear application. You can install this application and you can view this cache monitor application, or you can access the cache monitor application to view the real-time information about the dynamic cache. You can verify the configuration, cache policies, monitor the cache statistics. You can monitor the data flowing through the cache. Like, you can basically look the cache content for a servlet cache. For my servlet, what is the actual data that got cached into the JVM, you can see here. You can also monitor the data in the edge cache, view disk offload contents for the dynamic cache component, and you can also manage the data in the cache, which means like you can invalidate specific entries in the cache. With the cache monitor application, there are some limitations where you cannot see cache content across servers. You can also not see the DMAP content, like your own custom objects. You cannot see using the default cache monitor application that comes along with the WebSphere application product. If you move on to slide 28, I have given a URL for a DeveloperWorks article that has extended cache monitor application. This is advanced than the default cache monitor application. You can also monitor the cache across servers. As you can notice, there is a pull down list to select the application server. You can also monitor the object cache, like the DMAP, whatever custom objects you can place, you can monitor those things. So this is also a pretty neat application, and if you are using custom object caches, I would recommend using extended cache monitor application off of DeveloperWorks. Let's move on to slide number 29. In next few slides, I'm going to discuss about troubleshooting some common problems as well as some basic tuning for dynamic cache replication service. Let's move on to slide number 30. Okay, the essential dynamic cache tuning. These properties that I have specified, this will help to reduce the traffic that flows across servers. So if you are somebody using a lot of distributed map, or if you are having a portal server or a commerce server, you may want to choose, or you may want to configure this tuning. The first property is ignore value in invalidation event. So whenever invalidation event comes in, the cache content will get ignored. Filter timeout invalidation. As I mentioned earlier, there are various types of invalidation, like time-based invalidation events, explicit invalidation events, or LRU invalidation events. Sometimes it makes sense not to propagate time-based and LRU invalidation events across servers just to save some network configuration or some network traffic. To reduce some network traffic, you may want to filter out time-based invalidations or LRU invalidations, but that you can use those custom properties. You may also want to control the cache entry window size. This will help you, especially if you are having any kind of memory issues, let it be fragmentation or out-of-memory conditions because of a cache replication or data bootstrap during server coming up and going down. If you are having any kind of fragmentation issues, these settings will help. Cache entry window and cache invalidate entry window size. And the other property is use server class loader. This is especially needed for portal server. This is also used for all other usages as well, but especially if you are using portal server, this proves the lot of performance improvement when you add this custom property. I have listed a few tech notes here. The first one especially talks about tuning portal server cache replication. Like, if you are having a portal environment and out of the box portal may not have all the tuning and all the fixes that are required, I strongly recommend you to go and review information in the URL and make sure you have configured all the properties mentioned. Also, make sure you have upgraded to the latest version, as there are a lot of APOCs in Portal as well as WebSphere application server that addresses some known issues with dynamic cache replication. And if you are using Commerce, I would recommend you to review information in the URL for the Commerce server. For general dynamic cache replication tuning, the next URL provides a good starting point. Let's move on to slide number 31. Okay, when you are using dynamic cache service as well as cache replication, you might notice a lot of informational messages or warning messages or error messages. As you might know, each message will have a code where dynamic cache messages will start with DYNA, D-Y-N-A, and data replication service messages will start with CWWTR. At the end of each message ID, there will be an I, E, or W. I is like informational message, which are just positive messages. You can just read them and ignore them. Whereas if the message ID ends with a E or a W, then you need to pay attention for those warning or error messages. As you can see, the problematic message is XML passing error. So if you don't have good formatted cache-spec.xml, it is very likely you'll see that message. Unrecognized element property while processing element. This also you'll see if you don't have good entries in the cache-spec.xml. Replication instance caught exception while sending or receiving messages. Say, for example, if you have any kind of serialization issues or network issues, you might see some sort of these messages. So when you are using cache replication, pay attention to all the warning and error messages that get logged into the system out log. Let's move on to slide number 32. This is a common problem that I see many customers report, especially if you are using DMAP and your developers might be building applications based on the DMAP API, and they notice like the data is not get replicating from one server to the other server. If you have situations like this, make sure the replication instance is launched, and also make sure you are using push mode. If you are using push-pull mode, the cache content will not be pushed to the other server. Only the ID will be pushed. So if you are using cache monitor application to monitor the contents of the cache across JVMs, you might not see the cache data in the other JVM immediately until the data is accessed. And also, if you remember the code snippet I have been showing earlier, like getting initial context as well as getting DMAP equal to context.lookup with the JNDI name, whenever you actually perform the lookup operation, that is when the dynamic cache instance will be initialized. So you may not see this message that tells WebSphere dynamic cache named so-and-so initialized successfully until the lookup operation is performed. Remember, once the lookup operation is performed, dynamic cache is initialized, then the bootstrap will occur. And there might be some delay between dynamic cache instance initialized and the replication instance is launched. As you can see here, there is about a second delay. So if the application code tries to put some entries into the cache, they might not get replicated immediately because there is some delay for the actual bootstrap process. So whenever your application user or the application developer complaining, like my cache is not getting replicated properly, make sure to review the system out log for these messages. And also, I strongly recommend you to read the information in the URL that I have provided in this tech note. This URL here lists all the possible causes for data not getting replicated, and from application developer point of view, what need to be done in the application code to avoid this condition. Basically, they need to make sure the cache instance get initialized way before they actually put or get entries into the cache. In that way, the replication instance is launched without any issues. Let's move on to slide number 33. You may also see like some kind of congestion messages. You see these kind of congestion messages whenever a server goes in and out of the view, meaning you might stop a server and start a server, and if there is a lot of DRS traffic or if you are using dynamic cache heavily, then the bootstrap may be expensive and there might be a lot of messages flowing across server, in which case the DCS or HA manager might get some trigger points and they may write these messages. If you see one or two messages, it's not uncommon. You can probably ignore it. But if you see continuously a lot of congestion messages and CPU starvation detection messages, you may want to review the configuration and make sure you have tuned the server. And depending on the stack product that you use, whether portal or commerce server, make sure you review the information in the URLs that pointed in few slides back. And I hope all the tuning recommendations, including the ones listed here again, like timeout, filter timeout invalidation, filter LRU invalidation, all these tunings are going to help you to avoid some congestion issues. Let's move on to slide number 34. Controlling the DRS message size. Why do you need to even control the message size? By default, the DRS message is not controlled, so you might see like huge amounts of data going from one JVM to another JVM in the form of a byte array, and the sending JVM need to create that huge byte array, whereas the receiving JVM need to create that huge byte array as well as deserialize the byte array contents. As you can imagine, your memory may get fragmented pretty soon if you are having a lot of DRS traffic. So sometimes, depending on your usage of the cache and the entries of the cache, you may want to control the DRS messages, message size. So you can use these custom properties like cache percentage window, cache entry window, batch update milliseconds. You can make use of these properties and you can tune the dynamic cache component in order to control memory fragmentation, as well as you may possibly avoid some out-of-memory conditions. Let's move on to slide number 35. Okay, one another important thing is we constantly keep fixing any known issues or any customer-reported issues in our future fix packs or in the subsequent fix packs of the product. It's not only WebSphere application server, but the stack products will also have some fixes included related to the cache replication. The reason being, the stack products might be using the dynamic cache component in its own properties file, or maybe they are using the dynamic cache component at API level, like the stack product might be initially using the replication type as a push, and based on the problems that was observed, they might choose to go from instead of push mode to a not shared mode. So constantly you may want to monitor the possible or the known issues in your product or the stack product and then try to go to the latest version of those products. Okay, move on to slide number 36. Okay, to summarize what we have learned today is our basics about dynamic cache service, about dynamic cache, about data replication service, as well as dynamic cache replication. As you know, there are various types of replication available. Be wise when you're choosing the proper replication type, as you might increase a lot of traffic and you may run into problems. And also make sure you have the tuning, essential tuning, based on the product, stack product that you are using, as well as based on the usage from your application development perspective, you might also want to tune the dynamic cache service. Okay, let's move on to slide 37. Okay, here I have provided a list of good resources where you can go and read about dynamic cache. The first one, Performance and Scalability Handbook, you can find various topologies there. Dynamic cache, improving J2E application performance by using dynamic cache. And you can see there are various URLs that I have provided here. I found most of them are very useful, and I refer them constantly to our customers whenever I work on a dynamic cache issues. Okay, let's move on to slide number 38. Here are some additional WebSphere product resources. You may want to go and review these resources. You can learn about upcoming webcasts like this one. You may also consider joining the WebSphere user community group. You can go and access various key product demos and tutorials. Webcast replays are also available, like webcasts like this. This one also will be available as a replay in the webcast replay URL. You can sign up for the email notifications for various things that are coming up. Okay, that concludes my presentation. If you move on to slide number 39.
Well, thank you, Rama, for a great presentation. At this point, Robin, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Okay, well, we are waiting for the first question. I see someone posted a question in the group chat. Could you explain the command cache a little bit further? Command cache is one of the techniques that you make use of dynamic cache component. In order to use the dynamic cache command caching, you need to write your own Java class to extend com IBM WebSphere command.cacheable command impl. Once you implement this particular interface, then there are various options available, like you can define your own custom ID, and you have like getID method call. You can also override the execute method, which will be called if there is no cache hit for the command. You can also specify various rules like dependencies for the command cache in the cachespec.xml file. Okay, I can take further questions on the call.
Excuse me, our first question is from Chuck Chang. Your line's open.
In my company uses object cache to cache catalog data. And, well, you might have mentioned that in the presentation, but I'm still a little bit confused. How do I control the interval? How do I invalidate catalog data, you know, based on whatever algorithm? How do I control cache data? How do I control cache interval?
You mean like the invalidation, like how long an entry should stay in the cache?
Yeah. How long will it stay in the cache, or what kind of algorithm does WebSphere provide to invalidate data? You know, for example, after like 100 hits, and you should go to a database and see if you need data update, or after like 10 seconds, you should refresh data. You know, this kind of algorithm, how many options are there? Or how to configure them?
You can specify how long it should live. If you are using the servlet cache or anything, and if you are using cachespec.xml,
mm-hmm.
In the cachespec.xml, you can specify timeout option or time to live.
Time to live.
Yeah. Once you specify that one, then the entry will be there for that amount of time. And in addition to that, if you are using DMAP, you can also call one of the arguments like set timeout. I don't have the right property name, but you can explore the DMAP API. There is a method call to specify how long you want that entry to be cached.
Is that where I can specify saying, for example, after 1,000 hits, I want to refresh data? Is that where I can do that?
You want to control like based on the number of...
Based on hits, yeah, not based on time. Yeah, I have to pick hours. I mean, time might not be the best choice for me.
Okay. No, I don't think any option is there to invalidate based on number of hits in the aspect.xml, right?
Okay. Okay, but in short, I can control timeout interval in cache spec
right,
or object cache, right?
Exactly. You can specify how much time it should live in the cachespec.xml file.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question is from Balanda Penny. Your line's open.
Hey, this is Balan Penny. I have a quick question for you.
Okay.
You had spoken distributed cache for the cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And I had used TangoSol, third-party software for distributed cache.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't used WebSphere yet, but my question is, if one of the apps within the cluster has a problem and it gets hung up, would that cause a startup issues or any issues of the other cluster with the distributed cache because the member is not being reached?
So one of the servers is trying to get an entry, and whether that will cause any hung-up issues, is that what your question?
Right.
Whenever you try to get an entry from the cache, if the data replication service, if the DRS is not ready, then you might not get the replicated copy from the other server. Okay, so you might just get a null value. In general, you should not see any kind of hang issues when you are trying to get an entry from the cache, whether you will get an entry or you won't get an entry.
What happened recently is that one of the app servers hung up and the other two app servers we wanted to restart. And when we restarted, it got hung up at the TangoSol cache. Until on Umbrella, we had to stop and start the app server that was hung up.
So okay.
Will we face the reason was that we were using the common port. We did not insulate the one that was hung up with the other two app servers. After changing the port number, that went away. What I was trying to understand here is that will we have any kind, I mean, is there any internal automation, anything done internally to insulate from one another?
Well, I don't know the exact reason for the hang-up. We might better answer that question if we can review the Java core or the thread dumps captured during the hang-up, because if we know the reason of the hang-up, maybe we can better answer the question.
Can I ask a second question?
Okay, sure.
What is the advantage or disadvantage for enabling and disabling ESI caching?
ESI caching, normally you use the ESI caching for caching the static content like HTML pages and images sort of thing.
Okay.
The advantages are you're stopping the request for static content at the web server level, so you're giving more CPU and memory resources for application server. And at the same time, the disadvantages could be you might want to see what kind of resources you have on the web server, and especially if you run into any kind of issues with the performance on the web server, you might want to control that ESI on the web server end.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Our next question is from Javi Manowar. Your line's open.
Hi, I have a couple of quick questions. Number one is, when we define the cache size, if it goes beyond that, what happens? And my second question is, in WebSphere 7 and 6, are all the properties and all the settings are same for caching? Or
WebSphere 6.1 and 6.0 or 6 and 7, you mean?
WebSphere 6.1 and WebSphere 7.
Okay, WebSphere 6.1 and WebSphere 7, most of the properties are same for both these versions, including the tuning settings. And if you specify for the first question, if you specify number of entries in the cache as 1,000, and you create more than 1,000 entries, the LRU entries, like least recent used entries, will get evicted from the cache. And also, you can make use of the disk offload feature, where you want to have the content to be cached, but I don't want to fill up the memory. If more than 1,000 entries are there, I want them to push to the disk instead of keeping into the memory. And dynamic cache component will automatically take care of pushing the entries into the disk, as well as pulling them, as well as cleaning up the disk contents. So the answer for your question is only those entries will be kept, others will be evicted, and you can use disk offload feature to keep those entries offloaded into the disk and manage them.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm seeing no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Robin. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.